Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
Hello and welcome to Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White. I'm a registered medium here in Lilydale, and you're tuning in to Lilydale Radio. This is my show where you have an opportunity to take part in a spiritual conversation with me and or my guests, and usually I have a different spiritual topic every week, and the focus is on spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, and more. So it's a great show for you to tune into every week at 10 a.m. on Wednesday mornings. And there are two ways to tune into the show. You can go to my Facebook page, which is Willa White Medium. And you'll, if you like and follow, you can know when I'm going live for these shows and other events. You can also tune in for an audio-only version online through blogtalkradio.com/LilydaleRadio. So I hope you can join us every week or catch the archived videos on my Facebook page. Now, this week, our topic is restructuring bad habits, and I am thrilled to have as my guest today, Tom Kratzley. Thanks for being here, Tom.
Thanks for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you.
Yes, thank you. Tom's been a guest on my show before. We've talked about spiritism, we've talked about Andrew Jackson Davis, and so he's a wealth of information. Tom lives here in Lilydale with his family, and you've lived here many years now.
Yes, permanent resident since 87.
There we go.
Yeah, but started coming here in 1968.
Wow.
Yeah.
Time flies by.
Long time ago.
He's had a long time affinity with Lilydale, and Tom is a spiritual healer and highly regarded as a healing teacher as well. Mm-hmm. So we're especially grateful that he can share some of his knowledge today. And I know you've developed something that's called restructuring.
Yes.
And we're going to talk a bit about that today. And so everybody's going to say, hi, Tom, online there.
Hi, so, everybody back.
I think they're excited that you're here today.
Yeah.
So as far as restructuring bad habits, let's get started and explain a bit about that.
I need to talk a little bit about the whole process of what that means, of what restructuring means.
Yeah.
And its impact really on the psyche. It's like, habits come from, and particularly bad habits, often come from traumatic experience.
Yeah.
You know, so
or wounds.
You know, we're unable to deal with it at the time of the original trauma, and so a lot of definition is created in the unconscious mind around the trauma. And then, here's the key. This is why we continue to do the bad habits. Is because at the time of the traumatic experience, we're convinced there's nothing we can do about it. You know, we're convinced of our powerlessness.
Right, in full victim mode.
In full victim mode, yeah. Right? And because of that, and because of, you know, of the way in which we saw it limiting us, we don't want to keep looking at it, right?
Mm.
So that's what commits it to unconscious. Right? So, which is okay, because you don't want to, who would want to keep looking at that?
It's a protective survival instinct.
It's a protective, right. Who would want to keep looking at that? But the problem, where the problem lies is that you still have to live the consequences of decisions made about it from the context, okay?
Yeah.
So as, and I think it go back to the beginning of where and why I came up with this as a process and doing it. Because I worked about 13 years in inpatient psychiatry, so I could see that there were limitations on the way things were practiced. And we're going back a number of years too.
This is
back in the the late 60s and 70s, and you know, through that time there were it was really felt that people couldn't change. They could cope, but not change.
Yeah.
Okay? So that was the
mindset.
That was the prevailing mindset, even among professionals, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best you could do was show people how to cope with their misery.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That didn't set well with me as a young person.
No.
And I also had this sense, and I knew that transformation was possible. And, you know, the interesting thing is, in almost every religion, there's the notion of some transformative experience that people can have in their relationship with God.
Absolutely.
That also transforms their lives in very powerful and meaningful ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Doesn't matter what the religion is. There are stories along
many
these lines.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. Right. So I knew that that was a real phenomena of consciousness and life.
Mm-hmm.
But what I didn't understand, you know, and I set myself on a path to discover how you could actually consciously replicate that kind of change, right? And two things I got involved with when I was living in Boston, and I moved to Boston in the late 70s, went to Harvard Divinity School, studied some psychology and religion there. And I got involved with a metaphysical organization there. It was called DMA, and they taught classes around the country, actually, on showing people how to better create the lives they wanted to create, but using metaphysical tools.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I thought that it was good work. But what I realized over time was that you couldn't get to real clarity without dealing with the stuff underneath.
Mm-hmm. That's
okay?
True.
Without dealing with it. And what brought me to that was there's a man by the name of Roberto Assagioli, who was a psychologist and a contemporary of Carl Jung's, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I developed a thing called psychosynthesis. But one of the most powerful things he had to say was this. He said that the way to the superconscious is through the subconscious.
Ooh.
Yeah. And from my experience, I realized that was true. That you can't, you know, and so much of the New Age, we have these teachings, positive thinking. The way to get through everything is positive thinking. Well, it's necessary but not sufficient.
Right.
It helps. It's necessary but not sufficient.
Yeah.
And I kept running into that. I could see it over and over and over again. And then with Robert Fritz's work, and he was the person who was in charge of that organization I was talking about that did the metaphysical work.
Okay.
He understood the structure of the creative process. He was a professional musician before he got into his metaphysical work, and what he's. I loved the work understanding that this was structural, that what we did, how we created our mental processes was all structural.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't appreciate, because he didn't appreciate the value of emotion in all of it.
Oh.
Right? Yeah. And for me, I'd come to realize it was a necessity to understand emotion and its place.
Because emotion can cement energy
in
place at times.
Right. But also, it does more than that. It actually prioritizes the meaning in consciousness. So,
ooh, deep words.
Yeah. So here's how that works.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a traumatic experience, there's a very potent emotional component to that. Right,
mm-hmm.
And emotion has like volume to it as well, right? So so the louder, the greater the volume of that emotion, the higher priority it holds in consciousness.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you have
if we let it.
Well, you almost don't have any control over it until you consciously address it. Because what happens is when it becomes unconscious, mm-hmm. it's happening whether or not you you are, you know, and you feel that you're not in control of it. That's why we keep doing things we don't want to do.
The pattern of this.
That's
yeah.
why we keep doing patterns, because mm-hmm. we feel as though we're not in control of it. It's like, why does this keep happening to me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is the question we have all the time. It's like, why is it that every time I get involved with someone like this, this happens to me? Or why is it that every time I have a job that's going well, something happens that undermines it all.
So it's a bit of self-sabotage
at times. It is, mm-hmm. but it's also, in an interesting way, it's also kind of an inverse creativity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right? Because what happens at the point of a traumatic experience, we surrender our power. Okay, that's the key piece.
Yeah.
Our power is surrendered, and then the unconscious mind is scanning our environment to minimize our involvement in it.
Right.
Because we've defined it out of context that's a dangerous place to be. Don't be here. Don't do this. This is the result that's going to happen. So the unconscious mind is like, okay. We'll engineer it so that you don't have to do this. We'll engineer it so you don't have to do this, right?
Right.
So over and over again, we repeat the same...
Controlling yeah, survival measures.
Out of a desire to avoid it.
Yeah. yeah.
Right. So that's the mechanism. And so over and over again, this is why we end up doing the things.
Mm-hmm.
But if you understand it from the mechanistic point of view,
mm-hmm.
Then the next question is, okay, so how do we get to the place in the unconscious so that you can change that.
Right.
Right?
Accessing
because
that.
You have to access what you did and why you did it and all that stuff. So what I discovered was you could use a simple regression process to get there.
Mm-hmm. So it's like hypnosis regression to some extent.
Not, yeah, but it's not a
it's
not a traditional kind of hypnosis. Now,
okay.
my process is... I don't relax people. He won't relax you. No. In the process of doing this work,
huh.
it's very important to be present with the issue.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not present with it, you can't change it.
You
right?
have to go into the pain.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So
instead of avoiding it or trying to squirm around
right.
it.
Right, so the process is as I work with people, is I have a serious discussion with them about, okay, what is it that keeps happening that you don't want to be happening in your life? You know, how is this pattern playing out, and why? You know, what's the issue? And I get them as self-consciously aware of how it plays out in the present.
Because no doubt, to some extent, they've already done an analysis
oh, yes.
themselves of this.
Yeah, but of course, the only reason they come to me is because they're sick and tired of it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
They're ready for change.
They're ready to change. Right. Right. So they're sick and tired of the of going through the same thing over and over again.
And they're ripe for it.
And not having any, you know, decent results. Okay. So that's the starting point. So what I do with it is in my conversation with them is I get them even more dialed in to the misery associated with it.
Go deep into it. Wallow
exactly.
in it.
Exactly. Not necessarily wallow in it, but to get to the amplitude. You know,
mm-hmm.
My job is to find the amplitude at which it was created, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and then we regress based on pain. We not on relaxation,
right?
But follow the pain to its root,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right? And it doesn't take long. It's like a countdown from 5 to 0, and bam, they're in a memory where the trauma originally occurred,
mm-hmm.
and while they're present with that, I assist them in making a whole series of choices and decisions.
So they rewrite the story.
Well, yeah. Well, basically, they change the meaning.
They
it's not necessarily
their emotions about it.
They let go of emotions they've been holding.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with this multi. I think the mind is a multidimensional phenomenon, right? So we're not talking about just the emotions. We're talking about thought processes that were likely created contextually.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
not that the person thought through and said, "Well, I'm not going to do this," and you don't know. That there's a part of the mind that recognizes the whole context and says, I don't want, I'm not going to get at this again. So my job is to understand that context and give them the appropriate wording to understand how they have carried that
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
so they can let it go
mm-hmm.
and let go the framework with which they were holding their powerlessness.
Mm-hmm.
In essence, they take back their power, and by the time they're finished with the process, they feel totally peaceful, totally comfortable in the midst of the trauma, with a sense they've taken back their power.
We call it in the storm.
And they have whole new sets of options around it.
Mm-hmm.
So what that fundamentally does is it changes the way in which the unconscious has logged the event,
mm-hmm.
so that it's no longer a threat.
Uh-huh.
Right? And all the stuff around it's no longer a threat. And they have whole new options and whole new resources with regard to those contexts.
Right.
Yeah.
So as far as changing the reality to some extent, they're changing their perception of that reality.
Then that's all you ever can do.
Right. So would you say that they come to an understanding of forgiveness with other people too in those moments? Or is
there's
that
a
not
huge
necessary?
Variety. No, with it's your, a huge variety of things. It depends on every time. It depends on the particular context we're talking about.
Okay.
So in some context.
Yeah, give an example.
So in some context, it may involve intense relationships with others where they felt abused or they felt wounded in various ways.
Right, right.
In those cases, yeah, they would have to forgive the person.
Sure.
Right? And and release, needs for revenge and
yeah.
things like that. All the kinds of things that would hold a person locked in an emotional struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So you peel all that stuff away so that they can be empowered once again.
And they're free of that.
And they're free of that link and that connection.
So you've popped the boil.
Yes,
exactly. When the pus has come out.
Right.
To kind of give a symbolic
right.
representation.
Now, sometimes it's not easy to let go of anger right away. Let's say, for instance, some regressions will go back to, like, childhood experiences,
sure.
right? Some will go back to the womb,
mm.
you know?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, some yeah. And a good number of them go back to past lives,
mm-hmm.
Now, and the past life question is an interesting one because, I'm not fully committed to saying that these were past lives.
Oh.
Okay? But I am committed because I didn't invent the story. The story emerges out of their process.
Out of them, yeah.
Out of their process. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm committed to working with them and their mind and how their mind holds it.
Right.
Right? And that's the only thing that matters.
Whether there's truth to it?
There's absolute. Here's where the truth is.
Right.
The truth is in the meaning, and what it means to them.
Right.
It doesn't matter if the event actually happened.
Ah, because the mind does play tricks.
Exactly, it can. Now, if you were to ask me personally, do I believe? I believe in past lives, and I do believe that we have. I have a different orientation toward it from most people.
Okay.
I often wondered why Andrew Jackson Davis didn't accept reincarnation.
Right, yeah.
And what I've come to understand about this from almost two perspectives is that I don't believe that the personality reincarnates.
Mm.
Okay.
What does?
I believe that there's an aspect of the soul that comes in, in the development of the soul, that the soul has many personalities.
Okay.
All right. And that... for instance, let's say you had a past life personality in ancient Egypt, that you were a priest or something, okay? You very well could have been. This is not a prediction or or a
along.
Psychic reading. Okay.
I'll play along. Yeah.
Right. But let's say that.
Sure.
That were the case. Now, that personality from ancient Egypt has no important value or meaning in this life.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be no reason for that personality to have to come in this entirely different context.
Sure.
So what has happened is that that personality has continued to grow and develop mm-hmm. on other planes of consciousness.
Okay.
All right? And is probably, indeed, even one of your guides.
So you're tapping into someone else's life.
Yeah.
To some extent.
Right.
And
so,
experience.
So, but anyway, just as I'm saying, like why, you know, what my
yeah.
perspective is on this and that.
You're not always tuning into exactly your past life, but someone else's life.
Yeah, a life that had some mannerisms. But I also believe this.
But there's some parallels
right.
that occur.
And what
I've had that similar thought about it myself,
right.
actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And what and the other thing I have this sense is that as a species,
mm-hmm.
we do have a duty to clean up our messes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And part of this is when we come back in, it's that we pick certain messes to clean up.
We have that. Well, so we have the spiritual
yes.
natural laws at work. This
yes.
The law of personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. We certainly have the law of creative reality.
Yeah.
That is very much present there.
Right.
And the law of cause and effect, law of karma. So
right.
Those are all.
Those are all part.
Part
all,
of what you're talking.
They're
about.
All woven into this dynamic of how we create a life. Actually,
mm-hmm.
you know, coming from. But all this is directed from a very much higher level of consciousness, and it's very, you know, so much of spiritual the dynamics around spirituality are beyond verbalization, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes it's best expressed by an utterance.
Yeah.
Anything,
yeah.
Because how can you adequately put words to an experience that isn't of this world?
Exactly. And it's
yeah.
very difficult at times. And anybody
yeah.
who's had any kind of profound spiritual experience will recognize that. It's like, okay, I've been there, but I can't bring it back.
You try to. It's sometimes you have such a concrete remembrance.
Yes.
And other times it's almost like trying to hold on to a dream that's starting to fade away in some ways. It
yeah.
has those kind of misty edges to it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So just this understanding of how the mind works and the multidimensional nature of it as a human being.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got our, and this can't be forgotten, the physical body.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
The physical body.
It's actually an integral part of the psyche, believe it or not.
Right? I agree.
The physical body is.
Because there are spiritual energies
right.
that have attached to this physical body for a reason.
So when I'm working with somebody in a regression, I'm very conscious of, and I set my awareness to observe the physical suffering they incurred in that lifetime.
Because you can sometimes visually see that.
And feel it, you know.
Feel
so
that.
I just ask myself, okay,
yeah.
so what was it like being, you know, burned at the stake, right?
Mm.
Or what was it like being drawn and quartered, you know? And so, you know, those kinds of things. Because
well,
people go back to things like that.
The visceral experience.
People go back.
Yeah.
And so I try to understand.
Do you see, the body kind of moving and shifting or twitching in certain ways?
Oh, absolutely. So,
yeah.
I mean, all those kinds of things. But then what I do is.
Are they in a light
in
trance,
a process,
would you say? Or are they.
No.
Like you
they're
I.
in a state of hyper awareness. That's what I call.
Ah, hyper awareness. Okay.
Hyper awareness, and that's what I'm looking for.
Okay.
I want people to be as fully and utterly and totally aware of the traumatic experience as possible. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't mean that they have that they're going through the gut wrenching pain that might have transpired in the
but
lifetime.
There's an observer
within
that.
But they're really aware. They're much more aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is, and what I've noticed over time, is when I articulate properly the level of pain physically that the person went through, and I ask them to release that, they actually feel it in their body now. It's a, and then they recognize, they actually recognize the aspects of that pain from having been, murdered or tortured or killed in another lifetime.
Right. Or something in this lifetime.
Or something in this lifetime. But even from, they'll actually experience the residue of it in this life. And they can actually, and they feel the clearing of that from their body when it's, once it's articulated, and they can breathe it out.
Mm-hmm. Right? So Eckhart Tolle talks about the pain body.
Yeah.
And would you say to some extent that it's that same concept of the pain body and being aware of the pain body that has been causing you issues? Pain body is not really your physical body. It's that idea that we have that.
It's the memory of the pain, too.
Yeah, right.
I do think that there are, that profound experiences have, if you will, electromagnetic signatures to them.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it would be like that. And and pain is an aspect of that, you know. So.
Emotional, physical.
But the important part is, and in the process is what I've learned in helping in guiding people through this, is that they're getting a profound awareness of what transpired at the time of the trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also, they're getting a profound awareness of the implications it's had in present day.
Right.
Okay.
The domino effect.
Mm-hmm. So what's interesting is if they go back to a core experience,
mm-hmm.
that might have been, you know, thousands of years ago, and sometimes it is that way.
Mm.
They also will sometimes experience, once they've cleared that,
mm-hmm.
You talk about the domino effect, in their mind they start to see flashes of interim lifetimes where they repeated that pattern.
Or perhaps in their family, on a genetic
level. Oh, yeah. But yeah. Also mm-hmm. all of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they see flashes of all that stuff. So what happens is, if you get to the core, mm-hmm. if you get to the source, then everything else that was predicated on that gets
reevaluated.
Unravels. It unravels. It says, okay, because what you've done to yourself, you said, well, okay, and your unconscious says, oh, if that's no longer true, then this can't be true either. So it automatically changes it.
The logic theorem.
Yeah, exactly. It automatically does it.
So I've observed this. Tell me if you have, too, this idea that when people have an aggressive emotional response to something, it tends to cement the karmic entanglement and to some
uh-huh.
extent.
Okay.
And so one could say that that's what's occurred, right? This aggressive emotional response, perhaps it's fear, perhaps it's anger, whatever
uh-huh.
it is, and that cemented things for them at that moment where they felt the victimhood or, you know, that
right.
emotion associated with it. And that then you're getting back to that space, unraveling it, restructuring it,
yeah.
as the term is today,
yeah.
and then you're able to reclaim the energy from the past,
yeah.
right? And then ultimately you don't have that cemented in anymore.
Right.
And you and so other people are freed from it.
Your unconscious mind isn't working against you anymore.
Right.
That's all it is. It's like, because basically that's what happens when you're repeating these patterns.
Sure. To some extent, I've observed this in mediumship readings.
Uh-huh.
So I'll be in a reading with a client, and as we're talking, because to a large extent of what we do is spiritual counseling as mediums, because we're kind of the intermediary between
yes.
the person in spirit
yes.
and the one here in the earth plane, and perhaps they have some unresolved issues or pains between them, and so that those can sometimes be addressed in a mediumship reading,
right.
and then people are able to let go of that heavy
right.
emotional attachment to it. That
and I call that spontaneous
energy.
Restructuring, because what happens
so that's
is
spontaneous restructuring.
Right,
okay.
And here's how spontaneous.
Because they'll say this was so healing
yeah.
for me because I was able to let that go finally.
Yeah. And in essence, the process is the same process, but what's happening here is that you're bringing light to an issue for them
mm-hmm.
and perspective they hadn't necessarily looked at it with before.
Yes.
And as they begin to approach it from that new angle, the epiphany occurs, that the aha occurs. I don't have to do this anymore in this way.
I can have a different view of life in this way.
We were talking about the spiritual experiences before.
Certainly.
These are epiphanies.
So
whenever that happens, there's a spontaneous restructuring. So the person realizes, I've been doing this. I don't need to be doing this all this time. You
Know,
so I'm going to change
it. So sometimes it's about forgiveness, for example.
Right.
That I like to say that it's forgiving someone for selfish reasons is A-okay. You can forgive someone because you've decided you just don't want to carry the burden anymore.
Exactly.
So you let go of the tug-of-war rope about it.
Right.
And you experience a release and a freedom from this. And sometimes those in spirit that have had that tug-of-war with you, they are also then released.
Absolutely.
So restructuring can happen for other people, if not just yourself.
Oh, yeah. And I've seen that.
And even when I'm working with people.
They
often have a spontaneous restructuring.
I've actually seen that, myself. And I have some intuitive abilities as well. So,
absolutely.
So when I, as a healer... But I've seen it working with people in the restructuring process where I have felt the gratitude from spirit for what they've done and what has taken place, and how the fact that the person here in physical has changed their relationship with themselves and the spirit. It liberates the spirit.
It does liberate the spirit.
Yeah.
And it can liberate the relationships that the client has here with other people here on the earth plane, and they
absolutely
no longer have to replay the broken record.
Exactly.
Of these things.
And that's the most important part about all this, I think. Stopping the pattern and having to relive the misery over and over again.
I think there are different healing modalities from around the world that to some extent deal with this.
Sure.
The idea of cleaning and clearing is something the Hawaiians talk about a lot of.
Shamanic processes go all the way back.
So, this is something that makes a lot of sense because it's something that you can see happening and working for a lot of other people, too.
But what's really nice about this process is it's so direct and so elegant.
Yes.
Go right to the core, change it, and be done with it. There's not a lot of mumbo jumbo.
There's not having to revisit many sessions.
No. No, it's a session per issue. That's how I address it, Now, it's possible, and then it has happened sometimes. I've had clients who come back, and they've gone back to the same past lifetime that they'd seen at an earlier session, but they were aware of a different energy there, In other words, their psyche was only prepared to handle so much of that trauma at one time.
Yes.
Right?
It's the same with body work, too.
Exactly,
A muscle or tissues can only handle so much in a session.
Right.
Before it's done.
And so this new element of that trauma had popped up that they didn't even see before.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And so when they dealt with that, and that it made another difference in their lives.
In this restructuring process that you're talking about, have you ever had a situation where the person has had an issue to address, and it's actually them taking on someone else's pain to some extent? I'm just wondering if that has ever occurred or if it's been tied in, with that.
Well,
because as sensitive, we can sometimes take on other people's issues, and unless the person deals with it on their core level and never truly resolves. But we can take that on. Have you ever uncovered
that
in your excavations?
As an issue. No, there is an issue for a lot of people,
Sure.
Where they feel overly responsible.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
And so basically that, that comes up in a lot of different sessions in different ways. So when you feel overly responsible for somebody, basically, there's this burden that you carry. Most people feel it in their shoulders, right? You're weighed down by this mythology that you're carrying that you got to do something for somebody else, right?
Right.
And in part, it's disrespectful, and I'll tell you why. What makes that disrespectful is you're not honoring the power people have in themselves.
True.
Right? So
you want to empower
draw
that.
You want to empower
and
rather
not have
than
them addicted to you.
Exactly.
And you know, people when they're in that space, they tend to start to get into a place of resentment about
absolutely. Yeah.
And they say they're doing it out of love, but they're actually feeling the resentment as they do it. So there's that energetic tie that becomes part of that as well.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff.
Actually, some of the greatest psychic vampires I've ever seen have been people who say, I'm a giving person.
And you've just been like,
And you wonder,
Well, it's an interesting observation, Tom. For sure. Because it's the way people view themselves versus how other people view them, right?
Yeah.
And what they possibly don't see about their role.
Their role, yeah.
So they can be blind to how they're truly being perceived.
Yeah.
And everybody has their own reality.
Absolutely. And it's like, and to be fair, most of us don't know our own minds anyway. Not totally.
Well, that's part of the fun.
That's part of the problem, yeah.
We're not supposed to know everything.
Doing. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Because part of fun is not knowing and the mystery of life allowing it to be unfolded before us and within us. And I kind of embrace the fact that I don't know everything. I like being able to learn.
Discovery.
And the discovery.
Yeah.
That's part of I feel I'm here.
Yeah.
To get excited about learning.
But it's a little bit unnerving when you think you're one thing and you discover you're something else altogether.
I think it depends on the relationships that you have with people because some people may perceive you one group of people may see you one way and another group a totally different way.
Yeah.
And you can see that within families.
Mm-hmm.
As I've done readings for people and the way their parents come through to them is completely different from how they come to their sister.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they had different affinities and different patterns with them that they possibly would need restructuring about. It's really fascinating. I see people are asking some questions about this, but I want to tell people, if anyone wants to call in and ask Tom a question about restructuring today, you're welcome to call in. The call-in number is 818-739-8818. Again, 818-739-8818. So call in and we can ask a question to Tom about restructuring. That's our topic today, restructuring bad habits.
Right.
And because you want to leave the good ones alone. But people are asking when you're doing classes, if you're going to be doing a class on restructuring at all.
Yes, I always do a training every year through the fellowships. I do one over Columbus weekend.
Okay.
And I train people to be practitioners, but also just, if you have some things that you want to change, it's a good opportunity to do that as well.
You got lots of guinea pigs in the class, right?
Because in the class.
That's when you're in a class, you're all guinea pigs for each other learning.
And in this class, you would have opportunity to deal with at least a couple of issues.
Yes.
And get to the depth of them and
so is that an all-day class or is it
It's like 4 days.
Oh, it's 4 days.
Yeah, it's a training. It is a training to learn how to.
Aren't they then certified in restructuring?
Yeah,
Is that how that works?
Yeah.
So
then you go through it, and then you have opportunity to go and share that that technique with others and help other people.
Take on clients.
Exactly. Yeah.
And be able to use that in your own practice.
Yeah, so it'll be Columbus weekend, which is like the second weekend always of October, I believe,
And where can they find information about that? Is it on your website?
Yeah, the fellowships. They find it on my website, too, tomcratchley.com.
You can check out Tom's website and find out more information about how to either book a session or take part in the training.
I haven't updated it for 2019 yet, but those dates will be on there soon.
He'll get on that.
Those dates will be on there soon.
And that way you could take advantage of learning more about that if you so choose. Now, what I was interested in, because you know, before you were my guest here today, I was looking up things about the Robert, I can't remember his name, the Italian guy.
Oh, no, Roberto Astigioli.
I couldn't say his last name. Astigioli. But he's a really interesting man.
Yeah.
The idea that he's one of the first people that really said that we need to look at the spiritual aspect of psychology,
yes.
not just
yeah.
the mental. And I guess Freud didn't like that so much. He didn't go
right.
into that
well,
so
and
much.
That was Freud's disagreement with Jung
yeah.
as well. You know,
yeah.
and Jung had
Carl Jung was like,
yeah,
yeah this
yeah.
sounds good.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you know, and this is something I had observed working in psychiatry for, you know, 13 years, is like that dimension has to be examined and has to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care if you call it something other than spirituality, but that dimension is important. Let me call it, and I've come to sometimes call it the ground of being. Now, we all have ground of being.
Okay.
You know, whether or not you can call yourself a you know, a devout atheist,
mm-hmm.
and like some of these people on, you know, that you see who defend atheism, right? They're devout atheists. But that's their ground of being.
Atheism is a religion, too?
Seriously, it's their ground of being.
Do you think that they might be more agnostic than they get?
No,
they,
no, some of them are very clear, you
yeah.
know. The only thing that exists for them is physical reality,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though when you look at life itself, when you look at even the concept of thought, there is no physical dimension to thought.
Oh.
And yet, these people are convinced.
But there are ramifications in the physical
they
brain.
They believe, you know, they've convinced themselves to believe that it all comes from the brain.
Right.
Yet we have scientific evidence that suggests otherwise.
But
now,
who?
That, yeah.
Throw it out the window.
Right. So, anyway. But anyway, it, to me, it's very, very important that this whole spiritual ground of being that people do have. And over again, when I see people, you know, people back in a traumatic event, I get them to let go of their sense of being abandoned by God.
See, that's such an important thing, that idea of being able to approach God again if you felt that.
Mm-hmm.
Separation, the illusion of separation.
Right, because if you're in a place where in a dark place where you've been, you know, rejected, I mean, the horrific places that people go to when I do these regressions are incredible.
And you have to hold the space for them as
yeah,
they go through.
Yeah, you hold the space for
yeah.
that. And they're horrific places, and you can understand where they feel so utterly alone, utterly, you know, bereft of any kind of comfort, love, support, you know. And what's interesting is then they can understand only from a past life perspective the depth of what they've been dealing with in this life.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything they experienced in this life doesn't measure up to the depth of that pain.
Oh.
So that there's no understanding. But this brings thorough understanding of why they've struggled with it
mm-hmm.
as much as they've struggled.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because it has so much, it impacted them at such a profound level,
mm-hmm.
right? And their sense of utter despair and hopelessness at the point of the trauma
right.
was so profound. And so when they can honor, acknowledge that, and let go of that, it really is an incredible resurgence of their spirit. You know, that they, and you feel it happening
yeah,
for
it
them, and they feel it.
The soul.
They feel it in the moment. They
yeah.
feel it happening when they invite it back in.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about epiphanies. I mean, there's
yeah.
almost it happens at almost every session.
Well, spiritual unfoldment mm. has those moments of transformation.
Yes.
And so this is an opportunity if people wanted to have a transformation in that sense. I think spiritualism is one of the religions that does support that idea
sure.
very much, that idea of the soul and the progression of those things.
Constant, yeah. What I think of it as, infinite grace, if you will,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because actually, before I developed this process back in the early 80s, It was my prayer, daily prayer for a good month and a half to be a vehicle of grace.
Oh. You know? And so that's what you affirmed. For
and
yourself.
That's when all the when the understanding came together of how to engineer a session so that people could get to that all the time.
So in the construct of that one psychologist, he has an egg shape.
That's a Jolie.
Yeah, he has an egg shaped diagram. Okay. So he has the high or a middle and lower consciousness.
Yeah.
So in the lower consciousness, that's where the fears tend to be. Would you say that you're working more along those lines of that lower consciousness and moving them through the others vibrationally?
Sure, but it has to. It comes from the willingness to identify that and be present with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I also trust the soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm working with somebody, I know that their soul ultimately is guiding where they're going to go and how much they can handle and how much they're going to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have absolute, you know, trust in that. Because I think it's really important that we recognize that that's there in other. For me, it's all about people being empowered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for themselves, and that's the beauty of this process. Is in this process, people are empowering themselves. I know sometimes, you know, people come away with this, "Oh, thank you for what you did," but they did it.
What you
it
were
was not doing. All I'm doing is facilitating. All I'm doing is facilitating.
Yeah.
They're the ones that made the choices.
You're providing them with.
I'm providing an opportunity for them to.
You're a witness to healing.
Exactly, I'm a witness.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I think that. You know, for anybody involved in the healing arts in any way, that's the best you can be as a good witness.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, we're not healers. We're good witnesses.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I've always had problems with that term healer.
Really?
Yeah.
I am shocked that you
I know, I have. Because I absolutely know that I'm not doing it. You know, it's like,
well, you are allowing the divine to
right, yeah, but I also know that
divine energy course through you to them, and
maybe
that's spiritual.
Yeah.
That's spiritual healing. So
no,
vehicle through which
the divine is always working to heal us.
Absolutely.
Okay, so here's
but
the only
some
thing
people
that
are
the
aware
only
of
thing that I'm doing as a healer. In terms of hands-on, now we're getting into a different area.
Yes, we are.
The only thing I'm doing as a hands-on spiritual healer
mm-hmm.
is attuning to what God wants for somebody else. That's all I'm doing.
Right.
Right? So like, I'm not, you know, and that function is not, you know, it's like it's a misnomer that you're channeling and that you're doing all this, like, you know, it's basically a frequency function.
A frequency function. This
okay.
is interesting. Okay.
So, insofar as you're able to get to in your own consciousness, to feel the frequency of divine love and balance for that person.
Sure.
You're in that moment aligning with the inner forces of that person has in their own soul
mm-hmm.
and divine intelligence that's constantly working to make that happen.
Absolutely.
With or without you.
This is true.
Okay.
Although, but you're there to help.
Okay, so when I'm there, you know, something happens because I'm there.
Yeah.
But it's only because of the frequency I allow myself to be attuned to
mm-hmm.
that amplifies their likelihood of hearing their own soul's voice,
right?
And responding to the divine, let's say the divine attribute of grace that's always wanting to bring healing to them.
True,
yeah.
True. And I feel that you are facilitating the healing within a person because they're sitting on the bench, let's say in church style spiritual healing, or they're sitting. On the table or laying on the table, however that happens, or just sitting and chatting with a person.
Yeah.
But sometimes people need the actual physical representation of another person assisting in that process.
Yeah. But, yes. Sometimes.
Because,
yeah. I'm glad you said sometimes.
Because can happen by ourselves.
Yes.
When we are.
There can be wonderful, spontaneous.
If we're in nature.
Yeah, absolutely.
But nature's facilitating. And it's part of the healing then, too.
Yeah, but guess what? So whenever you want to get to the holographic paradigm,
ooh,
everything is always facilitating.
we could have a whole other show about this, folks. This is so much fun.
Yeah.
And so it is part of that understanding that the divine is working through each one of us.
Yeah.
And that we all have access to that. But some people are at a place in their spiritual unfoldment to really allow that to happen.
Yes.
And so most of the people who are coming to you for
yeah.
this restructuring aren't, like I said, ripe for it in the sense
right,
that they're ready
they, yeah.
to make that change.
And that's what I would say, too. It's like, you know, if people ask, okay, well, who's good for this? Well, it's somebody that has to have, first of all, an observing ego.
Ah, an observing ego.
Okay.
Yes.
Then you have the capacity to recognize that, you know, you can observe yourself and recognize, like, and you have some sense of personal responsibility.
Yes.
That's
yes.
part of the observing ego. You know, and if you have that and you're clear that you need change and want to change.
Yes.
You're a good candidate.
Very good. But some people
the other
aren't
good,
ready.
Well, the other good candidates are people who are in utter despair.
Ah, because they have nowhere to go but up.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah.
And so I think to some degree they have to really be truly open.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And be, in a sense, prepare themselves. Do people tend to say that they need to decompress or they have to kind of let things rest after they've had the session?
Well, no.
Sometimes,
you know, what happens
is... Do they
feel
that other things come up within them because they've uncovered one thing?
It may happen on occasion, but it's not that common.
Okay.
And what does happen is that people will see in subsequent weeks, oh, that's how this is related to this. That's how it's related to that.
Dots.
More dots get connected. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a sense of new state of being around the issue.
Mm.
Like it takes a while sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
mm-hmm.
it's instantaneous.
Right.
I don't know why it's different from one to another. You know,
that's
I can speculate.
A personal experience.
I can speculate as to what some of the reasons are from my experience, but I, you know, to be honest with you, I can't say exactly that this is why.
Right.
For one person. The integration is almost instantaneous. For another person, the integration might take 2 weeks. Another person,
mm-hmm.
the longest typically is about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the time it takes for the body cells to replace themselves.
Yes, that's what I was
yeah.
thinking too. That
yeah.
there's a lot on a cellular
yeah.
level,
right.
energetically, that occurs
right.
within a person.
Yeah. But sometimes it's still, even that's instantaneous. So it's like, it's hard to know.
Miracle.
Yeah, yeah.
Miracle.
It's like that. It's like that, yeah. So it's hard to know. And, and then what happens, so occasionally people are in places in their lives where they're really ready for a lot of change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this does happen. And I've worked with some clients who I might have over a period of about 6 months done 4 sessions.
Mm-hmm.
But that's over a 6-month period.
Right.
And always a different issue.
Mm. Because
yeah.
now that they've
right.
done this, they
right.
can work on the next. They
yeah.
can work on the next.
Yeah.
And I think that's true to life. And, you know, one of the things that Tom and I were talking about before
yeah.
the show today is, you know, the idea that here at Lilydale there's an established energy that's happened over the years, and so that when people come through the gates of Lilydale,
uh-huh.
they can feel that very profoundly for themselves, that
yeah.
they're coming home, that there's an acceptance of energy. And some people have had spontaneous healings
yes.
That have occurred, or awarenesses, or a place of being ready to make those
right.
changes in their
or
lives.
Or the thing that I commonly hear is, I feel spiritually at home for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
That's a common statement that...
Yeah.
Over the years, I've heard from people coming to Lilydale. Yeah.
To some extent, mm-hmm. Lilydale does offer restructuring.
Yeah. yeah. But
time.
Here's the key. This is what we were talking about.
Yeah.
They say this without ever going to a meeting.
Right.
Without ever taking a class. Without ever...
yeah, they're not...
Just from the atmosphere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is a common, very, very, very frequent
experience
that people have. And I think it's wonderful that people have the opportunity to spontaneously feel those things. And, and that whereas they weren't aware before, they are now.
Yeah.
And how beautiful that is to bring more of the divine awareness into their lives.
And back to Davis now. This happens back to Andrew Jackson Davis, because Davis said the most important part about the founding even of this country was the opportunity that it provided for the liberation of the human spirit and the mind.
Yeah.
And so, and that's what I like about when people come here and they feel their spirit liberated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is true. And I think it's wonderful. People can find the different healings, healing places, healing spaces, modalities that are right for them in their journey. And that they will, by spiritual natural law, be attracted to that which is the healing experience for them, ultimately. So I think it's really been great to have you on the show. I know time's gone by so fast. Anything else real quickly you wanted to share about restructuring? Or are you doing any talks at any of the churches coming up?
I'm doing Sunday at fellowships.
Oh, this Sunday?
I'm speaking, yeah.
Oh, so this Sunday, it's an evening service at Fellowships of the Spirit.
Yeah, 6 o'clock.
At 6 o'clock. Tom, if you are going to be in the area and you want to have more Tom Cradsley, you can definitely be there for that. And then you do a healing mastery class in the
healing mastery is it usually starts the Sunday after the 4th of July.
Okay.
Right, and I do that at the Healing Temple here. It's a week-long intensive.
So that's for 2019 spiritual summer season, if you're interested.
And I'm also doing a weekend in next fall on spiritual anatomy.
Mm-hmm. And that's different from the restructuring.
That's different from the restructuring.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, that's tied into hands-on work.
Yeah.
And elemental awareness as well.
Elemental awareness. Oh, very cool. So a lot of great things.
Yeah, so courses in Lilydale. Yeah, I think I'm also doing one on the healing voice, projecting healing tones.
Ooh, the utterances.
All that can be found on the Lilydale website.
Eventually that'll be up on the Lilydale Assembly website. Yeah. So the summer program for 2019 isn't up and ready yet, but hopefully within the next couple months it'll be available for you all on the LilydaleAssembly.org website. So,
and within a week, I'm going to have my whole 2019 calendar on my website.
Which
so
is
you'll
TomCratsley.com. Great. Well, I'm so glad you're able to share today about restructuring bad habits.
Yeah.
And I think it got people really excited about these things.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, classes are one of the best ways to really experience your own healing abilities and learn more about those. There's only so much you can get from books.
Yeah.
You kind of have to just kind of go ahead and swim. Definitely.
Yeah. It's all about your direct experience that makes a difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, next week, I'm excited to say that I have as my guest Dot McCarthy, and our topic is healing and mental health. Dot McCarthy is a retired psychiatric nurse, and so she's had a lot of spiritual experiences in that role. And she also did some work in a prison. So there's some great things that she'll be sharing next week. And this is a great launching off understanding of things for getting ready for the next week here. Mm-hmm. So I hope you guys can tune in next week on Wednesdays with Willa at 10 a.m. So same time, same place, same medium on Facebook. So thank you, everyone, for your kind attention. We really appreciate being able to share Restructuring Bad Habits. Thank you for being on the show today,
Dan. And thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
It's fun.
Wonderful.
Thanks.
All right, everyone, have a wonderful, beautiful week, and enjoy the sunshine. Bye-bye.
Good.